This is Atsuko from Shonen Life, and you are listening to WMFO in Medford, 91.5 FM.
Hanging on like a yo-yo. Wake me up before you go-go. Good morning, Medford. It is currently 6:06 a.m. and you are listening to WMFO in Medford. And what a beautiful morning it is. You were just listening to a little Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go. That's a classic. I think I might start with that every morning as our signature. And as my loyal listeners know, we're going to start with a... As my loyal listeners know, we're going to have a tradition to end with obla-di, obla-da as the sign-off. And speaking of obla-di, obla-da, if you were wondering why I chose that, it's because it has my name in it, and it talks about Molly and the Band, and because of that, my father used to play it for me when I was a small child. So, I know you're probably wondering, wow, Molly usually has a bunch of guests on her show, because she has for the past two shows, and it doesn't sound like she has any guests. Well, you're correct. You're very astute listeners. And so, I would love if any callers would want to call in, but for now, we're going to play some jams, and I will get back to you on that. So up next, we have a little Hamilton, but not straight up Hamilton, a little Hamilton mixtape with Chance with Dear Theodosia.
Dear Theodosia, what to say to you? You have my eyes, you have your mother's name. When you came into the world, you cried, and it broke my heart. I'm dedicating every day to you. Domestic life was never quite my style, but when you smile, you knock me out, I fall apart. And I thought I was so smart. You will come of age with our young nation. We'll bleed and fight for you. I'll make it right for you. If we lay a strong enough foundation, we'll pass it on to you. I'll give the world to you and you'll blow us all away. Someday, someday, yeah, you'll blow us all away.
Ooh, Philip, when you smile, I am undone. My son, look at my son. So much more inside me now. Ooh, Philip, you outshine the morning sun, my son. And when you smile, I fall apart. And I thought I was so smart. My father wasn't around.
My father.
Song.
Good morning again. That was a little Chance the Rapper covering a Hamilton mixtape song, and I hope you guys enjoyed. So up next, I'll talk a little bit about my family. I have two wonderful brothers and two also wonderful parents. Oh, look, I think we actually have a caller. Let's see. Caller, are you on?
Yes, I'm on. Good morning, sweet, beautiful girl.
Oh, good morning, caller. So, how's your morning going?
Well, just terrific. I like the Dear Theodosia song. Hamilton is a wonderful musical.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah. Was that a song by, like, I'm not familiar with the story. Was that a song by, like, a father to a new daughter or something like that?
I think it might be a new son. But, yeah, definitely to a child.
Theodosia is a boy?
Actually, I don't know. It may be to a, like a... Actually, maybe it's a girl. I don't know.
How is Boston? I'm calling from out of state.
Boston is great. Oh, yeah, caller, do you want to tell us where you're from?
Yes. I'm from Iowa City, Iowa, the intellectual capital of the Midwest and thereby of the country, if not the world. Iowa City, Iowa.
Yes. I did hear once that Iowa City was the intellectual capital of the world. That is something
yes.
I did hear once.
Well, and the reasoning is this. The United States is the indispensable country in the world, and the heartland is the heart of the indispensable country, and Iowa is the heart of the heartland, and Iowa City is the home of the University of Iowa, which makes it the intellectual heart of the heart of the indispensable country of the world.
Well, there it is, folks. You heard it here first. So speaking of plays, as we were talking about Hamilton, I know that you've seen a lot of theater. What's some of the best theater or kind of musical acts that you've seen?
The best theater I've seen is the old classic ones. Phantom of the Opera, which my wife and I saw in both London and New York, and it was great in both places. Les Mis, which my wife and I saw in London on what was our substitute honeymoon, because our original honeymoon sort of got off track. Phantom, Les Mis. I once saw The Wiz, you know, the urban black version of Wizard of Oz on Broadway, which was great.
Yeah, that's actually many of those plays I haven't seen. I saw Les Mis, the movie, and it was good, but I wasn't super familiar with the story, so I got like a little bit lost because it's a big dramatic story with
yes.
lots of pieces.
Yes, and it does help a lot to be familiar with the original, you know, Judy Garland version to know of The Wiz, because it's hard to make sense of it otherwise.
Yeah.
Did you ever see, speaking of the Wiz, another backstory from that is Wicked. Did you ever see Wicked? Or
I did.
Did you wind up in like some hotel sick with your father when the rest of your family went?
I did, in fact, see Wicked with my two brothers in Chicago. Did the rest of the family see it without us and I was sick?
Yes. Originally, I think my your mother got four tickets. I was never supposed to go, but you got sick. So I stayed back with you in the Chicago hotel, and we spent a lot of time in the lobby, as I remember. I forget why.
What a
mensch. You weren't horribly sick. You're just too sick to go to the theater.
Gotcha.
You got better the next day.
Yeah. So I wanted to ask you a little bit about things that I deem that are your expertise. And that would be, in this regard, different Supreme Court cases and current politics. Because would you say that you keep pretty up on the news and know what's going on?
I do. I've been retired for 2 or 3 months. And, you know, I spend a fair amount of my time watching TV, and of that time, a lot of it's watching the news. So I spend a lot of time watching the news, CNN kind of thing. So, yeah, I'm sort of up on things.
Yeah, so if we talk about the, there's some interesting Supreme Court cases that are up right now.
Yes.
Do you want to speak about them a little bit?
Yeah, the biggest one is, the Supreme Court is hearing a case on privacy of a cell phone. I think the way it arose factually is some guy robbed a Radio Shack. They arrested him later in a different location. And the proof that he at least was at the Radio Shack at the time of the robbery was breadcrumbs from his smartphone. And the question on all this stuff, all this privacy stuff, is do the police need a warrant or do they not? And the police here did not get a warrant, which tees up the question, you know, was that a proper search? And if not, the evidence is not admissible. There's also, a non-legal technical question of, can the authorities, the FBI, physically or technically open a locked iPhone? And that was an open question for a long time. But they've now solved that. And they technically can. I think with help of an Israeli company. So the Supreme Court will rule whether the police can open your smartphone or not. To analogize, in the old days, if you had like a notebook, even a notebook with a lock, the police could open it, at least if they had you under arrest.
What about a car? So I remember in government class we talked about a car coming up in a Supreme Court case being like somewhere the police wanted to search, and I forget how that worked out.
Yes, a car is a special case that arises a lot because, a lot of people were arrested in their car. Long time ago, that was found that, you could seize a car and you could search a car. You could seize it because, a car by its nature can be easily moved and there might be evidence in it, so you could seize it. That was probably a relatively easy call. To seize it as opposed to search it. As to searching it, you can search it because if you're going to hold it, you have a right to search that which you hold, just so like if it doesn't have a bomb, it blows up.
Right.
So you can seize and you can search a car. There's sort of special rules for that because, like I say, it's so easily movable.
So I feel like the same rules would kind of apply to a phone. I think a phone is tricky because there's nothing really that has come up before that's totally analogous. But a car is someone's property, just like a phone. You're not like living in this car, assuming that that's not the case. And you can have a lot of personal information in this car or phone.
Yes. I think your analogy is absolutely right. But, then a car was held seizable and searchable. Judging from the argument of the Supreme Court justices during the hearing, which was either Tuesday, I believe. Most of them, conservative and liberal, seem to be very bothered by the seizure of the information, and might find it protected, which would be the first time the Supreme Court has held for privacy against the police in a relatively long time, and this is considered a more conservative court than most. But cell phones are just have so much energy, so much information that the court was aghast at the police being able to search and access that much information. They thought that was just a breach of privacy.
Yeah, I think a huge bipartisan issue is everyone is afraid of information overload and how much information we give to our Google accounts and our smartphone accounts and all of our credit card and bank information through our email. And I think that scares, you know, everyone, no matter your political affiliation.
Yes, that seems to be exactly what happened. The court has not released its decision, so we don't know what it's going to do, so we're just guessing. But guessing from the conversations, and like I say, surprisingly, conservative and liberal justices were both, you know, very aghast. It seemed to be I don't want to say bipartisan because they're not partisan, but, you know, cross-ideology thing.
Yeah. Also, another case is companies that hold patents just to profit off of lawsuits and how that may violate inventors' rights. Do you know any details about that case?
Yeah, I do. It's the so-called patent troll case.
Mm.
If you get a patent on a device and you hold the patent and, you know, you license it when you want to, and you don't license it when you don't want to, and you use it. Sometimes you sort of have to use it. Sometimes you don't. Then, you know, if someone uses your patent without your permission, you could sue them, A, to stop, and B, for damages for past actions. That's elementary. But the question is, can you assign it to someone else who had nothing to do with the invention? You know, by a contract, say, hey, agent, you pay me X bucks, and, you know, you can sue who you want. Those are called patent trolls, T-R-O-L-L. It's a relatively negative term. Well, they're not doing anything illegal. Well, I suppose
they're so we think out. Now, yeah, I guess that's to be decided.
Well, they're not breaking the law. No one's going to put them in jail. The question is, can they sue and collect damages as the assignee agent of the original patent holder, or can they not?
Right.
You know, if you sort of believe in freedom of contract, you know, if the original patent holder can do it him or herself or itself, if it's a corporation, why can't the contract with someone do it on its behalf? If you believe in freedom of contract. But in a practical sense, you know, that has just led to an overload of patent suits. And a lot of American business feel that the pendulum has swung, that there's just too much patent suits. You see that in American history from time to time. You saw it after World War I with both airplanes and cars. The federal courts were deluged with patents, on every teeny little piece of an airplane and every teeny little piece of a car. So they passed major patent litigation to sort of streamline that and redraw the balance. Well, maybe now in the digital age with all the new patents and inventions that come out in digital, we also have to, or Congress has to, redraw the line to restore the balance. Now, this is not Congress acting. This is the court, the Supreme Court acting, construing existing litigation, which is not as good as Congress making a new law and new facts, but sometimes it's the next best thing.
Gotcha. That makes sense. And I get very confused about the difference between patents, copyrights, and trademarks, because there are these kind of clear outlines that distinct them, but then you see certain things that you would think should be a trademark, and then you see a copyright, or vice versa. What's What are the clear lines between the three?
Yeah, to be honest, you and I once sent each other some texts on this, and I looked up some good language for the text, going back in our text history to see if I can find it. But basically, a patent is a monopoly granted by the government to the inventor of a device. And it lasts for a limited time. I think it's like 26 years, renewable once, so it adds up to 52 years. A copyright is monopoly on the government of a work, you know, an artistic work or a work of literature. Granted, a monopoly granted by the author of that for, it's a different time period for different kinds of work, but I think like for a movie, for example, it's the life of the author plus 70 years or something like that. Sonny Bono actually got it extended, believe me, when he was in Congress, because Sonny and Cher.
Yeah.
He was represented by the district that contains Hollywood. So you got this copyright extension much longer. And then the last one is a trademark. Trademark's a little different because it doesn't have a limit on how long it lasts. Trademark shows you the source or a mark that only the source or origin. If a mark, like a trademark, has secondary meaning in the public's mind, that when they see that mark, they think of a certain good or service, and they think of the owner of that mark as the source or origin of that good or services, that only the true, actual source or origin of those goods or services can put that mark, so that the consuming public knows whether it's actually, you know, from that source, like Coca-Cola or Kentucky Fried Chicken or, you know, Smucker's Jelly. So, you know, they know it really is Smucker's Jelly and not like, you know, some counterfeit.
Right.
That would have all the mark. And that can last without limit.
So is that, does that kind of cover a sign or a design or like a logo more so than the actual name?
A logo can be, right, that's exactly what it covers. A logo can be both a trademark and a copyright. If you just write, you know, Molly's Jelly in a plain font, and, you know, the public associates Molly's Jelly with real Molly's Jelly, well, then you can get a trademark. But if you, like, drew a nice picture of a jar of jelly, then you could also copyright that picture, and it could be both a trademark and a copyright.
Interesting. So you mentioned a little bit about, like, Hollywood execs, and that made me think, you are an expertise in movies, and I think our listeners would love to hear if you've seen any good movies or if you want to comment any movies you're excited about.
I went to see last night Denzel Washington's new movie, Roman J. Israel Esquire. It was interesting, but not not a movie for the ages, but it was interesting. I'm very much looking forward to a new movie directed by Steven Spielberg, starring Tom Hanks and Meryl Streep as Ben Bradley and Catherine Graham of the Washington Post about their decision whether to publish the Pentagon Papers. I mean, obviously with a cast and, you know, Spielberg, Hanks, and Streep, it's worth looking forward to. But it's also about the freedom of the press. And these days, the press is under siege from the president and others. And I think it comes at a very important time reminding us of the importance of a free press. Like Jefferson said, you know, if I had a choice between, you know, a democratically elected government and a free press, I prefer the free press. As far as protection of liberty.
Yeah.
Press is under siege this day, and I think this movie is very timely. It's, in addition to, it should be a great movie, because, you know, Spielberg, Tom Hanks, and Meryl Streep. What it's about, briefly, is, you know, the government during the Vietnam War kept a lot of statistics secret about the war, including the death count, both our own troops and civilians, and put out, you know, put out lies and put out false information. And the holder of that was the Department of Defense, which is the Pentagon. And the New York Times first published it. But a lower court issued an injunction against the New York Times publishing it. And they only published, you know, part of it, a small fraction. Then the Washington Post got a hold, physically a hold of the actual papers. And that wasn't covered by the injunction. So the question was, should the Post publish it?
Wait, what grounds were the injunction on for the New York Times?
State secrets would impair the war effort, national security.
National security. Okay, carry on.
National security. So the question was, would the Post publish it? And, you know, legally, since our lower court had already told someone else, you can't publish it. And they didn't. They obeyed the New York Times obeyed the order. They appealed, but for a while the order was in place. The Washington Post had to decide whether to publish or not. And if they did, they were risking prison and a fine, the destruction of the entire newspaper. But they eventually decided to publish it. And eventually the appellate court removed the injunction and allowed the publication, both by the New York Times and the Washington Press, of the Pentagon Papers under the First Amendment.
Wow, that sounds like, first of all,
newspapers from publishing.
Yeah, that sounds like, first of all, an amazing cast, but also really an incredible story. And this, like, I guess this isn't so much like discovering journalism, but I know Spotlight about the Boston Globe uncovering the scandal with the Catholic Church was really an incredible movie and told the story of, like, very incredible journalists. And I think modern day journalism is really, really exciting. Like you said, they're under siege. They have so many factors going on. All these print papers are losing funding, and they have to balance being impartial and being exciting and representing the news accurately. And I think that journalism is really, really an interesting thing to make a movie about.
It is. And you just put it very well. And another reason it's under siege, journalism is because of all the sexual harassment scandals that are plaguing journalism. Matt Lauer was just fired by NBC.
Yeah.
Fox was devastated by its owner, Roger Ailes, and its main guy, whose name, Bill O'Reilly, was fired from Fox, and Mark Halperin, from ABC, Charlie Rose from CBS. I think we pretty much covered all the major news networks.
Yeah, it's really...
They all had a major person fired.
It's crazy how it's plaguing every network. And, yeah, that Matt Lauer one was sad to see, but it's also incredible that, like, these brave women have been standing up to figures that are, like, loved by the public. It's easy, well, not easy, but it's one thing when someone stands up against someone who isn't loved by the public, and you know you can get public support, but to do the same brave action against someone who is loved is a tough thing.
It's very brave. I really admire the women who have gone against these huge men, starting with those who went against Bill Cosby. I mean, maybe this before that, but I was sorry to see Bill Cosby, who went to trial. A lot of times, you know, these things don't come up until after the statute of limitations has expired. And by the way, the state of California is looking at that issue and either getting rid of the statute of limitations for, you know, sexual harassment, or, you know, having some mechanism to freeze it for a long time. And I think that's an interesting issue, because people don't come forward right away. What is the situation on Tufts? Do you feel safe, Molly?
Yeah, I think sexual assault is everywhere, especially in colleges. It's at every college, and even Tufts has its numbers of like the same statistics as kind of nationally, with basically 25%, 1 in 4 women have experienced some type of sexual assault on campus. And I think it's a huge issue that Tufts is working really, really hard on trying to fix, and it affects a lot of women on campus. I am extremely lucky to say that I have not been affected, and my day-to-day life, I feel very safe. And remember, these are not kind of like they're not stranger occurrences. What, like 8 out of 9 times it's someone you know. And so I think there are a lot of situations in which bad things happen, but I am lucky to say that really I feel incredibly safe on campus. And I walk home, you know, late from the library or late on a Friday or Saturday night, and campus is pretty quiet, and I feel generally safe.
Glad to hear that. Glad to hear that. But don't get complacent. Safety first, particularly this level of safety.
Yes, understood. There's one more thing I wanted to ask you about, but now it is slipping my mind. What were we talking about? Statute of Limitations. So I was, when I first kind of heard about Statute of Limitations, it kind of confused me. What are the benefits and reasons we even have statute of limitations on different crimes?
Well, statutes of limitations for both criminal actions and civil actions, and they exist in both realms, you know, are absolutely, you know, a good idea in general, although, you know, certainly some exceptions and stuff like that. The theory is, you know, you need to bring... I think more in the civil world, you know, like say, you know, in the civil realm, say you have a contract and someone breaches it. You want, you know, the claim to be filed in court while it's fresh. You know, the business that turns on it is still at stake. The witnesses' memories are fresh. You know, you don't want a claim hanging over a person forever. You know, a contract claim usually has to, a written contract claim has to be made within 5 or 6 years in most states. And, you know, you want it brought within 5 or 6 years, because if they don't bring it within 5 or 6 years, it's probably not important enough, and you don't want it hanging out there forever. And there's also statute of limitations for criminal actions. More or less, the worse the action, the longer the statute of limitations. Murder in most states, and it's a creature of state law, murder usually does not have a statute of limitations because it's so heinous. But like, you know, a real bad assault might have 20 years, which I think is the longest statute of limitations. You know, drug offenses are usually 3, 4, 5, or 6 years, although the federal statute is longer. It's so claims are brought fresh because, you know, litigating stuff when memories are fresh is much better than litigating something that happened 20 years ago, which is hard to do. That's the theory behind statute of limitations. I think it works in most instances, but the one instance in which it doesn't work is when there is an obstacle to people bringing the claim, which is exactly right. What is the case when in a superior-inferior dynamic, like, you know, a young woman production associate on a Hollywood set dealing with, you know, Matt Lauer or Bill O'Reilly or Bill Cosby. They can't bring it. They had to wait till this Me Too movement, which I think is terrific. But, you know, only, and even with that going on, it's hard to do. But anyway, that's the problem with statute of limitations in the context of when there's a great disincentive to bring in the claim.
Right. So if there's a statute of limitations on a criminal case and you're past that, can you bring about civil charges for like emotional damage or other money? And so even though there's statute of limitations on civil cases, like issues that have nothing to do with criminal, just civil cases, is there any statute of limitations on bringing about a civil case on a criminal situation?
Yeah, like say someone walks up to you and punches you in the nose. That's both a criminal offense and a civil offense. Each would have its own statute of limitations, and it would not necessarily be the same, although I'm not sure which one would be longer. I would think the criminal statute would be short. Say, you know, someone walks up and punches you in the nose. There's probably like a 2-year statute of limitations for the prosecutor bringing a criminal case, but there might be like a 5-year statute of limitations on you suing the guy who socked you in the nose in civil court for damages. So yeah, I mean, even if the 2-year criminal statute is run, you can bring the civil case if it's within the 5-year statute of limitations. And that, those are just examples, but yeah.
Gotcha. Well, caller, thank you so much for calling in. I think we're going to play some tunes now. I appreciate all your expertise.
Can I make a request for maybe later in the program?
Yes, you can.
The theme from Goldfinger by Shirley Bassey.
Okay.
It's the only song I've ever got put on the radio before, you know, you, and it was probably about 50 years ago when I was a kid.
Nice. Okay.
Theme from Goldfinger.
Sounds good. We will see if that makes it on. Only time will tell. But for now, we're going to play a little Amy Winehouse with Valerie. She's one of my favorite artists. And it's a live recording, so there might be some applause in there. But here is Valerie.
Well, sometimes I go out buzzing and I look across the water and I think of all the things, what you're doing, and in my head I paint a picture. Well, since I come home, well, my body's been a mess and I miss your gentle hip and the way you light the daggers. Won't you come on over? Stop making a fool out of me. Why don't you come on over, Valerie? Valerie. 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 Did you have to go to jail? Put your house on up for sale. Did you get a good lawyer? I hope you didn't catch a thing. I hope you'll find the right man who'll fix it for you. And now you're shopping and anywhere takes the color off your hair. And are you busy? And did you have to pay that fine? And you were dodging all the time. Are you still dizzy? Since I come home, well, my body's been a mess. And I miss your gentle head and the way you light the dregs. I want you to come on over and stop making a fool out of me. Why don't you come on over? Well, sometimes I go out by myself and I look across the water and I think of all the things, what you're doing, and in my head I paint a picture. Since I come home, well, my body's been a mess and I miss your tender hair and the way you light the day. Won't you come on over and stop making a fool out of me? Why don't you come on over, Valerie? Valerie.
All right. That was a little Valerie by Amy Winehouse. What a tragic story of Amy Winehouse. I remember being at camp while she died. I think there aren't a ton of stars that I remember loving at the time while they died. I think Amy Winehouse was at camp, I remember, and at camp there's a pretty limited amount of information. And so it's really special when we get that information. Oh, and it looks like we have another caller. Let's see. Caller, are you with us? Caller, are you with us?
Hello.
Hello. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing okay. Yeah.
Caller, do you want to tell us your name and where you're from?
I'm April. Go to Jeff from Amherst, Massachusetts.
Nice. We are glad to have you on. So for those of you who are keeping up from our past weeks, April was our guest last week, and she has since ran a marathon, so that's pretty exciting, and I think from all of our viewers, we would like to congratulate you. And how'd that go?
Super well. You know, I felt pretty good going into it. It was super early in the morning you start because it's a long endeavor. And then running through Philly was so awesome. It's not to say it wasn't hard, but
yeah,
I was really happy with the outcome. And the recovery has also been a little challenging.
Yeah, I'm sure. You put your body through a lot of stress. And tell us about Philly. What parts of the city did you run by? Was it just kind of all streets? Were you by a river?
The first 10 miles were inner city. So we ran by, like, the State House and the Liberty Bell and UPenn. And that was really, really cool. And then there was another section where we ran a loop by the Please Touch Children's Museum. And then there was another loop of about, like, 10 miles where we ran along a road that was by the river leading into Philly.
Nice. That sounds beautiful.
Yeah. We really lucked out. When we were at the starting line and, like, getting through security, it was pouring rain, super windy, super dark, terrifying looking. And then the moment we got to the start line, things cleared up.
So a pretty foreboding start, but
yeah,
you really,
like,
powered through.
Yeah, we were lucky with the weather clearing up right when we needed it to.
Nice. Yeah, Philly, it's interesting that every city kind of decides to have a marathon. Like, almost every major city has a marathon. And I think it's a good way to kind of, A, get a, tourist attraction, and B, have, kind of showcase their city, as something special and something beautiful and kind of attract a different type of crowd than usual.
Yeah. I'm kind of curious, though, like, what makes, like, a better marathon than another? Like, Boston's so competitive to get into, and everyone knows about it. And, like, New York is pretty up there, too. What made those two stand out over, I don't know, Chicago, Philly,
yeah,
other cities?
I think Boston, at least, is one of the oldest ones. And had a lot of history of having, like, the fire department and the police department run it and lots of fundraisers. And I think they're, yeah, just the oldest and had a lot of, like, community engagement and just kind of got a lot bigger. Because I think Boston's the biggest, like, has the most runners. And that's what makes it so competitive to get in. But that's a great question. I don't know, because there are lots of kind of small marathons around the country that are in pretty big cities. Like, the San Francisco Marathon is pretty small. But that being said, that one would kind of suck because it's so hilly.
But, I mean, sometimes that's the attraction.
Yeah, that's true. It's an extra challenge. So before, I was talking about Amy Winehouse and kind of seeing a beloved star die in those memories. And I'm glad that I don't have too many of those instances. And like I was saying, another one of those instances is Robin Williams. And what a fabulous star. Do you have any instances of when you were a big fan of someone and saw in the news that they passed away?
I'm not sure. None are coming to mind right away, but I'm good at forgetting things that I want to forget.
Yeah, that's a good point. I also, it's funny, a lot of stars who died during the summer I associate with memories at camp. So at camp, I remember Amy Winehouse died during the summer. Michael Jackson died. I wasn't like an avid fan. I didn't regularly listen to his music, but he's definitely a huge pop star and did huge things for the industry and had a really big mark. So obviously that was a mournful day. And also the guy from Glee, I forget his name.
Corey Monteith.
Yeah, Corey Monteith. He also died during the summer. I remember hearing that at camp. Man, I feel like a lot of life events just happened during the summer. And like when the Supreme Court passed legalized gay marriage across the whole U.S., I remember they announced it and I was in the bathroom. And so I missed it. And then later that day, my camper came up to me and was like, isn't it so exciting that, you know, gay marriage is legal all across the U.S.? And I'm like, what are you talking about? It's not legal. Like, and she's like, yes, it is. Da-da-da. And I had to kind of like sneak off to my room and find my phone, which we're not really supposed to have, or the campers don't know we have, and look it up. But it was kind of a funny moment. You miss major news events if you're in the bathroom.
So how does that work? You're only caught up via some announcement?
So yeah, for staff members, we have our phones. Like we have access to the news as much as we want because we have a lot of things in our life that we need to kind of keep up with. But campers, they don't have their phones or really any like TVs or way to digest the news. So any like big events, we will try to do our best to kind of tell everyone. But other than that, they're kind of in a news deprivation. But I think that's okay for kids. And also they get letters from their parents and their parents can email them and we print them out and hand them to them. So if there's any like family news they need to hear, they'll get that on a daily basis. But as opposed to world news, it's kind of isolating.
How long are the campers there?
So it depends on age, I would say. That anywhere, the youngest kids are there for there for 1 week, and then the oldest their kids are there for 6 weeks. But the average, I would say, is 4 weeks. Most kids are there for 4 weeks.
And you guys are there for longer than 6 weeks?
Yeah, staff are there for 8 weeks, 7 with campers and 1 as a staff week.
Nice.
Yeah. And I think recently I've been coming to terms with the fact that I'm not going back to camp. It's a sad realization, but something that I think is okay. Oh, I'm looking at the time, and I think I need to do a little PSA. So, April, I want to thank you for calling in, and
thank
I hope you have a wonderful day. I'm so glad we got to hear about the marathon.
Yeah. Bye.
All right, bye. And so up next, we have a little announcement from our dear old friends. And this one is going to be about magic school donations.
Watch out! What was that? What happened? Stranded halfway between Mercury and Pluto, Miss Frizzle and her gang of second graders have no way back to Earth until they remember that radio waves never die.
Keep your paw on that button, Liz.
Guided by the freeform stylings of WMFO, the Magic School Bus Gang safely makes it back towards Earth. To avoid future field trip mishaps and to help keep WMFO running strong, write a check to Trustees of Tufts College and send it to WMFO, Attention, Donation, P.O. Box 65, Medford, Massachusetts 02155, or give online at support.wmfo.org.
And with that, I will start my sign off because it is currently 6:57 a.m. and you are listening to WMFO in Medford. Man, didn't that time just really slip away? So I know we said usually our sign off is a oblah de oblah da, but I think today we might need to put on